This is Countryfile Live 2019, the podcast that lets you relive some of the best moments from the talks and presentations that happened in the National Trust Theatre at this year's BBC Countryfile Live event at Blenheim Palace. In this series, you'll hear from the likes of Ray Mears on the best time to get involved with nature, from Timothy Bentinck, a.k.a. David Archer, who gives us a peek behind the scenes of the Archers, and from our panel of expert gardeners, who deal with all your gardening dilemmas. In this episode, we join Countryfile presenter Charlotte Smith in conversation with pop star turned farmer J.B. Gill, who shares stories of how he made the transition from microphones to manure, his celebrity pig, Ginger, and just what the rest of JLS think of his newfound career.
Was farming on your list of things I might like to do when I grow up?
The short answer is no. I mean, I did grow up around nature. My dad kept horses in the Caribbean, and I remember some of my earliest memories, and certainly photographs are of me on the back of one of my dad's horses with about three or four of my other cousins, you know, and being under, I think I must have been about three, maybe two or three. So there were quite a few cousins that fit onto the back of my dad's horse. But yeah, you know, I've always enjoyed the outdoors, but when we moved back to the UK to live and go to school, I went to school with my brother, we were always sort of in South London, so it's very much an urban area, very much in the town as opposed to the countryside, and although we did sort of make, you know, various excursions to the outskirts of London, so, you know, some of the lovely gardens and palaces and so on, yeah, you know, my existence very much was within that urban community, so no, farming wasn't in the thought process at that time.
So you went off to university to yes. study
theology,
obviously. but you didn't stay at that point at university, did you?
No. So I did 2 years at university, and in my second year, I actually met up with the boys who went on to become JLS, and that year was kind of a bit topsy-turvy for me, really, because obviously my focus was on my studies, of course. But at the same time, you know, I had a real passion for music, and I've always had a passion for music, even, you know, being six or seven, when I started with playing the recorder, I went on to play the piano as well, try the guitar, you know, do the flute, which I did probably, that was the instrument that I was most proficient in, and I went to Centre for Young Musicians to study there for the flute, so I had always been sort of embedded in music in some way. I sang in the choir from a very early age, you know, all of those sorts of things, and sang at church and all that sort of stuff, and so I knew that I wanted to be involved in music in some way, shape or form, and it just so happened that my first audition, I suppose, was with the boys, and then about a year and a half after we'd formed, we decided to go on to do the X Factor.
And that was the end of uni?
Pretty much. for me, I mean, it was a tough decision, to be honest, and one of the reasons why I always wanted to go to university, even though I knew that I wanted to have a career in music of some sort, was that firstly, that industry is very, very difficult to get into, but secondly, I always believe in having backups, you know, and doing other things.
Plan B.
Yeah, plan Bs are important.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, I knew that I was able to go to university. I went to a very, you know, good university. And I just felt like it would be such a waste if I didn't put that, you know, put my education and my abilities to good use. And if the time came that I had to put it on hold, which is what I originally did, as opposed to sort of just, you know, dropping out straight away, then I would take the opportunity. But if it didn't, guess what? I got a degree and I could do whatever I wanted to do. And as you say, it just so happened that we, you know, had great success on the X Factor, got to the final, came second, and then you know, our career as pop stars really took off.
So who won your year then?
Alexandra Burke.
Really? Wow! Yeah. What a year!
Yeah.
Wow. So what's it like? What was it like being on the X Factor? I mean, going from being a student doing a bit of music and then suddenly it's the X Factor.
I mean, it was. Honestly, nothing prepares you for that experience. I think what was good for me personally and for us as a group was the fact that it was a group. So you're sharing that stage with three or four, you know, for me, three other people. And, you know, you can bounce off each other. You know, you've got a bit of a network there. If you're having a bit of a down day, someone else can cover for you. And that's what I loved about being part of a group. And it was, I always say that it's kind of a crash course in the entertainment industry. You know, in 12 weeks, you literally do absolutely everything. You're doing press, you're doing interviews, you're doing rehearsals, you're doing performances, everything you can think of. And I was only 22, I think, when, or just turned 22 when I went into the, to the X Factor house. So it was just the perfect time, really, and we took the bull by both horns.
And it must have been really fun.
It was a lot of fun.
So then you became, I mean, a massively successful boy band. Massively successful.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, you know, and it's not something that I often think about, but when I sit down and I actually look at, you know, the list of the achievements we've had and some of the things that we've done, some of the places we've been to, the people that we've met, yeah, I mean, it was in about six, I think it was about 6 years, we did a lot. we really did. And it was, as you say, it was a whole deal, a great deal of fun.
And then you decided that the band was going to call it a day.
Yeah.
Which must have been hard.
It was very difficult. On the one hand, it was good because we took a very objective view of our careers and music in general. We loved doing what we were doing, and we wanted to... We got to the stage where our record deal had basically been completed. So we, when you go into the show, you kind of sign a blanket record deal, and if you obviously do well, then you're obliged to kind of fulfill that. Not everybody fulfills a record deal, and it doesn't actually matter. Usually it goes album by album, but there is an obligation for you to, it's like a bit like a contract. So that we had four albums and a greatest hits, and we completed all four albums, and then we had the option of a greatest hits or to sign a new deal. And we were just at the stage individually, I think I was 27 maybe, and some of the other boys were slightly older, and we were at a stage of life, I think we were considering families, considering getting married, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And I think the phase of life had changed a little bit, and we were just in that place where we didn't particularly want to do another 5 or 6 or 7 years. And or if we decided within that next sort of four albums and the greatest hits that we only wanted to do two albums and then actually do other bits and pieces, we didn't necessarily want to be held to, you know, that contract. And so we took the decision at that time that it would be best for each of us individually if we went off and did our own things, weren't bound by, you know, a contract at Sony somewhere or whatever, but could do whatever we wanted to do, wherever we wanted to do it, however we wanted to do it. And that's why we made that decision at the time. And it was great because, you know, I think for me, I was about to get married, and so I was really looking forward to, you know, that next chapter in life. And I didn't have the appetite for being a solo artist. So,
'cause that's what most people do, isn't it? They get rid of the band, yeah, who've just been, you know, supporting them all this time, and they go and they make a solo album and they tour. And you didn't want to do that.
No, I mean, it's not to say that I would never do something like that, but I just didn't have the same drive for it. Musically, the things that I enjoy are relatively unusual, but I enjoy that sound of vocal harmony. I enjoy that choral sound, you know, and it's probably because I've you know, grew up in choirs and, you know, that type of music. Even playing classical music, you know, obviously it's you know, very operatic and very, you know, vocal based as well. So I just really enjoyed that, and for me to do it by myself just wouldn't be anywhere near as fun.
So you became a farmer. And I will never understand that trajectory.
Well, I mean, it was something that happened quite organically, to excuse the pun. I moved out of my family home, I think I was about 25 or so. And my mum encouraged me to buy this piece of land that came with the house, the farmhouse. And to be honest, at first I just said, oh no, I don't really want to do that. Why? I'm not going to use it. What's the point? But she kind of talked me around and said, just get it anyway. Even if you don't want it, you could always sell it at a later date. And it was a bit of a headache to look after in the first instance. I was traveling a lot, hardly at home. But I did enjoy being out in the countryside when I did have some time off. And that's kind of how it all started. And when I was going to get married, and my wife and I were thinking about having children, my sort of mind switched to the type of life that I could create for them and what I wanted to leave for them. And so I began thinking about what I could do with the space, what I could do with the land. And I knew that historically it had been farmed. And so I just started researching different types of farming, what I could get into, you know, what I could learn myself in the shortest amount of time. Farming is something that I've always been passionate about anyway, and food especially. You know, I've enjoyed my food. I've always loved my food, trying different types of food, food from all around the world. And I think the food that we produce here in this country is of an incredibly high standard. And I love that. And, you know, I celebrated that. And so it was really a quest. It began as a personal quest and developed into more of a vocation and then obviously a working career, really.
And before you got started, you did go and get some advice, didn't you? Notably from Adam, our own Adam Henson.
Yes, indeed. Adam was one of the first people that I spoke to. You know, and he said, yeah, definitely come down to my farm, see what we do. And he took me to a couple of other farms locally to him as well and said, you know, you can get a feel for different types of things, different types of farming, some which are popular, some maybe not so much. You know, obviously he focused on rare breeds and he sent me away with a couple of his chickens. Unfortunately, they're not still with me now. But you know, it was nice to kind of hear from him. And something that I've always been appreciative of, actually, everybody in the industry, I am a newcomer, really. It's only been about 6 years, 7 years, really, I've been doing it. And there's always been so much enthusiasm and so much willingness to share and welcoming. You know, Adam and a number of others have been incredibly welcoming I've felt welcome, and I feel as though, as I say, it's something that I'm incredibly passionate about and want to continue doing.
So what are you farming? Describe what you do.
So we predominantly livestock. So we have our chickens, as I say, and we have them primarily for eggs for the family. And then we have Tamworth pork, so they're a rare breed. We didn't get those from Adam. We actually rescued our first pig, Ginger, from the RSPCA. And she was fortunately recently lost her. So that was a bit of a sad day on the farm. But from her, we've had 3 or 4 litters on the farm. And we have always stuck with Tamworths. And we at any one point, we probably have about 70-odd on farm. And then our biggest thing is probably our turkeys, which we farm for the Christmas market. Kelly Bronze turkeys. And they're just, if I may say so myself, they're just sublime. They're exquisite. They're free-ranged. We have them outdoor all the time. They do have shelter, but they, you know, it's not gated or anything like that. They're not shut in at any point of their time on the farm. And we love seeing them there. And you know, we've slowly built that business up, which is at the farm gate. So people come to us every Christmas. We put on a bit of an event, and at the moment we've got about 250 on site. So, yeah.
And you do, you might be imagining that there's a farm manager or there's somebody who does the work and you just say, yeah, I'm a farmer and pull on some pristine wellies. But it's not like that, is it?
Not at all.
Where were you this morning?
This morning I was in the turkey pen and I was having a bit of a hot flush because I was greeted to the sound of one or two of our turkeys floundering about and flapping about, which isn't usual. Usually they're just cheap and they're fine and you give them their food and check that their water's okay and that's it. And I actually found that we had probably about 20 dead turkeys, which is so frustrating. And I believe the fox got in at some point in the night. But unfortunately, that's one of the things, you know, that comes with farming. What can you do? You know, and you do have to farm alongside the wildlife and the environment. And, you know, it's sometimes frustrating, but it is what it is. And I got turkey poo all over my clothes and had to deal with all of the turkeys and so on. And as I say, sometimes it's frustrating, but you know, it is very incredibly rewarding as well.
Why do you do it?
Purely because I love it. I think it's really important for people to understand where their food comes from. And not just, you know, obviously in this country, a very small number of people, farmers generally, make food and produce food for a very large number of people, our population. And I think it's just as important for us as a population, for everybody in this room, to understand where our food comes from, the process that our food takes. Even if, you know, the aspiration isn't to grow your own stuff or have your own animals or whatever, I think it's really important for us to have that connection. And we've lost it over the years for various different reasons, some good, some bad. But anything that I can do to kind of reconnect people to that journey. And I spent a great deal of time really trying to become the farmer, you know, emulate an Adam or whoever, you know, and try and learn as much as I could and, you know, try and use every inch of space that we had and so on. But actually, you know, speaking to lots of different people, my wife was one of them, she said, you know, actually you've gone through a process with your career where you've got a platform to speak about these things. And there are lots of farmers, and I've met most of them, who don't want to talk to people. They don't want to talk about what they do or how they do it because it's not easy for them to do that, but actually it's easy for me to sit here and talk about anything, to be honest, and to be able to shine a spotlight on what I believe is a very important industry for us and obviously around the world, I think is something that I take very seriously, so that's why I do it.
Okay, let's get some questions. If you would like to ask a question, wave your hand in the air and make it really obvious. Oh, look, there we go, fantastic. And here comes our glamorous assistant, Bernie, and close behind, Nick. Okay, tell us who you are.
Hi, my name's Ava. I was just wondering what your two proudest moments were, your first one when you were part of JLS and now as a farmer.
Wow, that's a good question.
That's a great
Thanks,
question.
Ava. My proudest moment in JLS, without doubt, is when we won two Brit Awards in one night. That's kind of like the equivalent of the American Grammys, if you can picture it. For the UK, and we won two in one night, one for Best Single for Beat Again, which is apparently a really difficult thing to do, which I didn't realise at the time, but there you go. And obviously for Best British Breakthrough, I think, which is kind of like the newcomer act. That night is just so surreal. You know, I was sharing it with my family, with my wife now, and I just remember not being able to think straight or see straight, to be honest. And I don't know, it was just, that is kind of the what you work, not what you work towards, because well, we never did music with the aspiration of winning something as a result. But when you're recognised for the things that you've done and the hard work that you've put in for maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years, X amount of time, to actually see other people take notice and say that they enjoy it or say, hey, you deserve that, is really incredible. And then my single greatest moment with the farm was probably witnessing the birth of our first piglets on the farm. Because I was only probably about 26, 27, and didn't have any kids at that time. And if you've ever witnessed any type of birth, whether it's an animal, obviously, you know, now I've got kids, my children being born, it's just the most incredible experience. And especially with animals, you know, you get a tiny little animal which is born, and within about 15 minutes, they're up, they're suckling, you know, from their mum. It's one of the most natural things in the world, and it's incredible to watch. So, you know, that's definitely a moment that will stick with me forever.
Question at the back.
Hi, Jason. Alan Hewitt from Cheshire speaking. Enjoying your journey into farming. You know, well, I think most of us all done this. Everybody's perception of a farmer is having livestock, but nobody seems to mention horticulture and fruit. Do you have any wishes to get into fruit production or anything like that on the farm?
Absolutely. So we do actually have a small orchard, and we have Braben apples. And we have conference pears as well. And it's definitely something that I'd love to do more with. I think when I first started, I had my dad to help me. And as I mentioned, I went up to see Adam Henson at his farm and so on. And so for me, the thing that I lent most towards was going into livestock. But as you say, I think it's just as important for us to back horticulture and obviously agriculture with producing crops and so on. And it's definitely something that I'd love to do. I don't have enough knowledge about it at the moment, but yeah, it's definitely something that I'd love to learn more about and begin to do. I do grow bits, you know, we've grown potatoes and carrots and things like that at home, sort of in a, you know, the box type setup with the kids. But yeah, it's definitely something I'd love to do on a larger scale.
Okay, question at the front here.
Yeah, hi, it's Maureen.
Hi, Maureen.
You said you've got children.
Yes.
Do they have their chores on the farm and do you pay them?
Well, I mean, my son's probably just about the right age for payment.
He's
or
nearly
pocket
five.
Money. Yeah, he's almost five.
Having so, met him, he would definitely negotiate hard.
Exactly. But no, he will. I mean, both myself and my wife, both of our families have been sort of, you know, working families, have had their own businesses and so on. So my wife's family used to be florists. Her mum used to be a florist. So she herself has grown up in that working environment, helping out at the busy times of the year and so on. Similarly, I've always helped my mum, although she's involved in healthcare. You know, she sort of ran her own, you know, business and did admin and bits and pieces. So I've always been involved in that and helping her out. And similarly, you know, with both of our children, whenever we get the turkeys on site, they come and they help out. You know, they're not quite old enough to do admin, but we'll get them there soon enough. But yeah, just showing an interest for me, I think, is really important. And, you know, even just the most mundane tasks like mucking out and so on, it's really nice to see my son being enthusiastic about something like that. You know, and it's just purely because he sees me doing it. You know, I'm there and I have to do it. And then all of a sudden it's, Daddy, can I have a shovel? And I'm like, it's a bit heavy for you, Ace. And he's just like, yeah, no, but I want your one. So, of course, he gets my one. I get the other, you know, get the rake or whatever, or the fork. And, you know, it's just nice. For me, it's great because I'm working, but I can be with the family. You know, they are here with me today, actually. But sometimes it's difficult when I'm doing some of my, you know, my entertainment work to have them involved in the same way. So for me, it's refreshing and it's a bit of a win-win.
In fact, the one-year-old's just woken up, I can see. So
is she?
Stay put. Okay, question down here.
Hey, mister, what's your name?
Thomas.
Hello, Thomas. You having a good day? What's your question for me?
What types of tractors do you have?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Tractors.
Well, I tell you what, Thomas, tractors are very, very expensive. They don't actually tell you how expensive they are. They're worth more than a house, some of them. But I have a very old John Deere tractor, and apparently they're supposed to be the best, but...
Ooh, controversial.
Yeah, exactly. It's always controversial.
We've got a magazine which has tractors for sale.
You've got a magazine, we've got tractors for sale. And how much is the most expensive?
So the one that's most expensive is £2,018.
Wow. Well, do you know what? I'm going to have to do a bit more saving before I can get that one. Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you. Question over here somewhere. Oh, there you are. Sorry.
Hi, JB. My name's Trish, and my daughter and I were big fans of JLS, and in fact, we were at your last but one ever concert, which is really emotional.
Bless you.
A bit of a two-part question. Firstly, of all the animals that you farmed, have you ever been tempted to keep any as pets?
I have. So we kind of have a bit of a system like that with the farm. So all of the animals that we have who are part of the breeding stock, they tend to be on farm for the duration of their life. So Ginger was kind of, I mean, she's almost our famous pig. And we like to think that she's more famous than Peppa. but as I mentioned, unfortunately, we lost her last month, which was a sad day on the farm. But we'd had her about eight years, I think. And we rescued her, as I said. So I think she may well have been 10 or 11, maybe even more. So it was nice to have her and really to give her a new lease on life. And as I mentioned, with all of our kind of stock animals, our chickens and so on, we have them to stay, really.
There was a second part.
Yes, and I'm sorry about this, but it's not farming connected. But are you ever likely to reform?
With the boys. Well, I tell you what, when I can get them all down on the farm to help me muck out, maybe we'll consider the reunion. But no, you know I'm good friends with them all. You know, we've got a great relationship. Our families are very close, so you never say never, but there's no plans at the moment. Yeah.
Have they been down to the farm?
Yeah.
What do they... Are they honest enough to tell you what they really think of your career change?
I mean, they genuinely think that I'm nuts, probably.
Why are you surprised?
I'm not, but, you know, it's interesting. Aston, our youngest children are relatively close in age. And I saw Aston most recently, and he said, you know what, Jay? You know, you've done a really good job. Yeah, not that he doesn't give compliments out, but he was really interesting to kind of see his perspective. And he said, you know, what you've done, no one else has ever done, really. Yeah. I mean, Alex James has done it, kind of.
He makes cheese, yeah.
Yeah, but with the greatest respect from our community, which is very much an urban community, it doesn't happen. You know, and I didn't set out for it to be that way, But as I say, it's, for me, it's something that I'm really passionate about. And regardless of whether you come from a rural community or an urban community, food is just as important. We all need it to survive. And, you know, regardless of whether you want to go into a farming career or not, you know, it's really important for us to embrace how our food is made, you know, the quality of our food, you know, how we're approaching the food that we eat, you know, for our well-being as well as for the environment's well-being. So it's nice to kind of see here, you know, him, them, embrace what I do. And when I send them home with a, you know, a box of eggs and they have those for breakfast the following morning, they don't really complain too much.
That is surreal when you think about it. And you go to a concert for JLS a few years later, they're all going around to his for Sunday lunch and going home with a box of eggs, which is an extraordinary way of doing it. What's next on your farm? What's the plan?
Well, I would love to, as the gentleman asked me over there, I would love to look at growing something, you know, more things, should I say. I've got a real fascination for deer and for venison production. I love that as a meat. And of course, you know, game, I think, is really undervalued. We have some excellent game in this country, you know, and I think it's really important for us to think about, you know, eating game more, especially because it's seasonal. You know, we know in the news we've had all sorts of stuff about, you know, the production of beef and so on and so forth, and whether we should eat less meat and so on. And while that may well be the case, I think it's a lot of the things that we can do to combat that would be helped through seasonality and us eating more seasonally as we used to historically. So if I could branch into that side of things. That
you would need quite a lot of space, I'm imagining, for deer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is why we've not done it yet. But we do get quite a few wild fallow deer coming through the land, and they're always nice to see. And you know, we've stumbled across a fawn or two being born on the farm, and it's, again, they're amazing to see and just kind of watch them from a distance. You know, they're incredible animals, and I love them.
Now, you've managed to combine all this in a slightly Adam Henson style with doing TV. I'm sure a lot of us here with children saw the Down on the Farm, which was just lovely. If anybody didn't know, it's just lovely. Describe what it was about.
Well, effectively, it was like a junior countryfile, you know, and it was a snapshot into life on a farm, life in the countryside, and the journey that our food takes. So, as an example, you know, we went to a farm which farms peas, and we saw the whole process, how they, you know, they grow the peas, they sow the peas, they harvest the peas, and then how those peas end up being, you know, used, whether they're in, you know, the fresh tins or frozen or whatever it might be. And there's, you know, been a number of different sort of farms that we've visited. Of course, they've come to my farm and we've spoken about the pigs and what a group of pigs is called. And it's just really an introduction for young children, you know, children my son and my daughter's age, you know, where they can sit and learn about something which is so important, as I say, for their future, and really gives them an understanding about the world that they live in.
Did you enjoy doing that? Or was it slightly, well, hang on, I still want to be on my farm and you're dragging me to go and look at blooming peas?
I loved it. I think it's really important. And, you know, one of the great things about CBeebies is you're interacting with the children as well. So it's not just top down. You know, you're working with the children and people who work with children and having them involved in it. And it's brilliant. It's great working with them because they help me to remember my lines. But it's also great kind of seeing some of those younger children involved in their farm. You know, we went to a strawberry farm where it's sort of a pick your own, grow your own type farm. And the little boy there was just so immersed. All he wanted to do was eat the strawberries. But he knew everything about how they were grown and where they were grown and why they were grown. And it was just great sort of speaking with him on an adult level, really. And him telling the story of his farm and what they do, and that effectively being the piece for that week. So it's brilliant, really good.
Quick question.
I'm Ella May. Question. When you first got into farming, what made you choose livestock over crops and things like that?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, particularly because with crops, you don't have to get out of bed so early.
Well, it's a funny story because, as I mentioned, I never really had any intentions of going into farming. And I was looking for a dog, as you do, and I wanted to rescue. So I went to a couple of local kennels and things like that, and just asked around and said, do you have any links with anybody, and is there anywhere that could come to find a rescue dog? And one of the ladies that I end up developing a friendship with, she said, we have all sorts of animals here. If a dog's not right for you, then you could always take one of our family. I think at the time they had sheep, a couple of horses, and so on. And I was like, no, it's not right for me. As much as I love horses, not getting into that whole thing. And I went with my dad, which was the biggest regret of life, because he stumbled across this pig, Ginger. And long story short, about 2 or 3 months later, he ended up saying to me, so that pig that we saw last time we went down to the kennels? Well, I just thought we'd get her. Is it all right if I put her on the farm? And I said, yeah, well, as long as it's almost flip reverse, the sort of kid and Christmas and getting a dog for the first time. As long as you look after it, feed it, water it, I don't mind. Yeah. Leave me out of it. And he's now in America somewhere working, and I have to look after them all. But that was kind of how it all started. And, Ginger, as I say, she was just an incredible pig, and she's involved in photo shoots. In fact, Anita Rani did a photo shoot with
really?
Her.
Really?
Yeah. Came down to the farm and did a photo shoot with Ginger. And livestock, I think, as I say, is where I found myself naturally, and where I was able to, I suppose, learn the most, the quickest. So that's kind of where I started.
Do you have any nerves about getting any bigger? Because, I mean, at the moment, you can contain it and do a bit of you've done Springtime on the Farm, done a bit of Songs of Praise, Country Fowl, all sorts of other and you can contain it. If you get bigger, might that get harder?
Yes. I think on both sides. I think the more work that I do in television, obviously the more time it takes me away from the farm, and similarly the more time I'm away from the farm, especially where I am, because I'm in a semi-rural area. So it's not very easy for me to get, loads of farmhands from here or the local farmer to do that for me, so on. I do have relationships where we are, and there are some farmers, and they look after, they've got big tractors and, a lot more machinery than I do. But it is difficult. And I think our aspiration really is probably to follow it similarly in Adam's footsteps and be able to open our farm out to the general public and have people come and see what we do and embrace that side of the farm. But it's going to take a lot of preparation, a lot of development, and I think we're going to have good people. We're going to have to trust a little bit, but we're going to have to give good people in place, because, we take it very seriously, both myself and my wife, and we're very proud of what we've done, of what we've achieved, and we want to make sure that whoever is in place, if I am away working or whatever, is doing the best job possible. So hopefully it will happen one day, and we'll be set up to hand over the reins, so to speak.
So of the bits of TV that you're doing, which are the bits that you're really enjoying? Because you're doing so many very different bits, aren't you?
Honestly, when I'm outdoors and anything that involves the outdoors, that's what I love the most. I recently did a show on the BBC called Walks of Life, which was kind of a mashup of rural lifestyle, the countryside, walking. We did visit a farm or two, and we even had a couple of city walks. And it was nice just kind of meeting those people. And it was all about understanding how that land, wherever that place was, and we went to Edinburgh, Shropshire, Cornwall, and Dartmoor, and kind of they're all very different landscapes, and kind of seeing how each of those places has shaped the people who live there. And some people have moved from a town or city or whatever to a bit more of a remote area. Some people have done the opposite, and some people live there all their lives. And kind of for me, getting to grips with all of that and seeing different parts of the UK, some which I'd seen before, and some I was just learning about, was just so fascinating. And I love getting out and about and exploring different places. And even with the farm, if down on the farm or whatever, it's nice to see how other people do it, and what they do well. And sometimes take a couple of tips back for home, and sometimes just enjoy the fact that they're doing what they do the best.
See, now you know he really is a farmer, because farmers are the nosiest people you will ever meet. And there is nothing a farmer likes better than going to another farm and nosing around it and faintly disapproving. That's true, isn't it?
She's not far wrong.
You've been a real sport to sit on this very hot stage and be so endlessly charming. Ladies and gentlemen, JB.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this extract from the many talks and debates that happened in the National Trust Theatre at BBC Countryfile Live 2019. To learn more about this and other audio programmes from the National Trust, go to nationaltrust.org.uk/podcasts. And to purchase your ticket for BBC Countryfile Live 2020, go to countryfilelive.com. This is a National Trust podcast recorded at BBC Countryfile Live 2019.